Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. It is great to be back. You know, I had to consult Google Maps and GPS this morning to remind myself how to get to work after 2 weeks. No, I'm kidding. But the two-week vacation is such an anachronism in today's world where everything is on such a tight time cycle. People say, really? 2 weeks at once? Well, yes, that second week, if you can take it, is really another whole level of relaxation and decompression. So I'm for it. And it is great to be back, but it was great to be in the Adirondacks, where I like to spend a little time each year. If you've never been up to Adirondack Park, north of Albany, north of Saratoga, and if you really want a contrast from your regular New York, New Jersey plugged-in life, you should really go. The Forever Wild designation for such a big part of the state really limits development and commercialism. Nature itself is the tourist attraction. Did you notice in the news last month that Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Cuomo did an Adirondacks tourism promotion with a whitewater rafting race that they staged up in Indian Lake, New York? That's actually not far from where we go. And it is really great. I will say, though, that not everyone who lives there year-round loves the development limits and the protection of the woods. It's easy to find Tea Party flags, seriously, on the front lawns of homes up there. You know those Don't Tread on Me flags that these days are seen as Tea Party flags? Well, some people feel the state just limits them too much. So life is complicated. Politics are complicated, even in the mountains. But for city people looking for something more natural than the usual tourist spots, something really as special as many national parks, the Adirondacks are a long drive, but really great for the mountains and lakes and bike routes and the sky. It's worth it just for the night sky. And later in the hour, we'll have a call-in on what I missed while I was away. You fill me in on the news that you think mattered over the last 2 weeks. But I had to come back today because tonight is the first of three official New York City primary debates that I will be asking questions in during the next 2 weeks. These are the required debates under the city's campaign finance law. These are the WNYC New York 1 debates. And with me now are Errol Lewis, host of Road to City Hall on New York 1, weeknights at 7 and 10 p.m. Errol and I will co-moderate the Democratic comptroller primary debate tonight between Scott Stringer and Elliot Spitzer. That'll be at 7 o'clock tonight here on WNYC and on New York 1 television. And folks, you can suggest questions right now on our website and vote on questions that other people have suggested. Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So Errol is here. Also, Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on New York 1 Noticias. That's their Spanish language news station. He'll be in the public advocate and mayoral debates with us in the coming days. And WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen. So hi, Errol. Hi, Bridget. Hi, Juan. Happy debate season.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And before we even get to the races and the debates, we have big breaking news for the city in the last hour. A federal judge has found New York City's stop and frisk program as practiced unconstitutional, violating both Fourth Amendment search and seizure protections and the 14th Amendment equal protection clause. And reading from the New York Times website now, it says in a decision issued on Monday, the judge, Shira Scheindlin, ruled that police officers have for years been systematically stopping innocent people in the street without any objective reason to suspect them of wrongdoing. Officers then frisk these people, usually young minority men, for weapons or search their pockets for contraband like drugs before letting them go, according to the 195-page decision. The Times says to fix the constitutional violation, Judge Scheindlin, a federal district court in Manhattan, said she intended to designate an outside lawyer, Peter Zimroff, to monitor the police department's compliance with the Constitution. The decision to install Mr. Zimroff, a partner in the New York office of Arnold and Porter, LLP, and a former corporation counsel and prosecutor in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, will leave the department under a degree of judicial control that is certain to shape the policing strategies under the next mayor. So, Errol, you're a lawyer. How big a change will this be for stop and frisk? What will be different on the streets today?
Oh, this is a big deal. This is a very big deal. She basically is rewriting the – well, she's ordered a monitor to sort of make sure this all happens, but she's also indicating that she wants certain changes to happen. She's changing the 250 form, the form that the police officers are supposed to fill out. She goes on at length in this decision saying that they have to fill out a narrative section. It's not enough to just check off a box, and that often is what was happening, is that the cops would check off, you know, furtive movement or high crime area or something like that, which in the judge's ruling, she said, leads people to sort of put in these post facto explanations, but that they have to now do an entire narrative about why they, you know, in what sense they were convinced that there was something suspicious going on. So she's really changing the whole thing around. She even orders, Brian, a one-year test of body cameras as part of this whole thing, that she orders the NYPD to see if mobile cameras that cops are wearing could be used to sort of cut down on some of this activity. There's going to be a huge fight. There's no way I can imagine the city is going to let this simply happen without asking for all kinds of injunctions and appeals and delays. And but if what she is calling for were to actually happen, it would be an entirely different way of doing policing in New York.
When you talk about injunctions and appeals, this is a federal court ruling. This is constitutional law. This could go all the way up to the Supreme Court. Is that what
yes,
you expect?
Could. Yes, it could. And believe me, this administration in its remaining months is not going to simply say, oh, well, it's the judge's order, so let's go out. They'll throw out all the 250 forms and change everything around. They're going to fight tooth and nail, and, you know, who knows? The next mayor might do the same.
And listeners, we posted a link to the actual decision. You could read as many of the 195 pages as you want to right on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So Bridget Bergen, WNYC political reporter, the candidates obviously have been talking about stop and frisk all this time. What do you expect to hear, or are you hearing anything already from the campaign trail?
Haven't seen any statements yet, but I certainly expect that we'll have a peer reaction from them throughout the day. I mean, this is for the candidates. John Liu has been the most outspoken in terms of calling for an all-out ban on stop and frisk. Excuse me. And you know, this decision is so sweeping. I imagine a statement from his campaign, you know, very much applauding this decision, very much saying that, you know, it speaks to the point that he's made, that this is a policy that has been misused by the police department. All the candidates have talked about reforming it to some degree. His position has just been the most extreme out of all of them.
And Juan Manuel, I would imagine applause for this from all the major Democratic candidates, in addition to John Liu, even though they've gone to different degrees in calling for reforms of stop and frisk. Christine Quinn even saying she would stay with Ray Kelly for police commissioner if he were to be willing and she was elected mayor, but she would still want some changes in stop and frisk. But do you think I'm right in anticipating that the major Democrats in the race will applaud this decision?
Of course. They're going to do it just because now they have another strong argument with their campaign issue of stop and frisk. And to those who were pushing for more oversight of the police department with those bills right now at City Council waiting to be override the veto from the mayor. So I think it's a strong argument for all those candidates. Also, it's some sort of like ending point to this controversy, at least throughout the campaign, I believe. And now the candidates can talk about all the things that those communities are interested in also, like education, jobs, and housing.
When you report this issue on New York One Noticias, do you see it as being, in a sense, the same issue to the Latino community? And I realize there are many Latino communities, many black communities, but is it kind of a unified black-Latino ambivalence that's out there about stop and frisk versus crime, or are there different reactions in different communities?
I think you have different reactions within the same communities, and I think it is an important issue, but it's not the number one issue, because if you go to those neighborhoods, even though they are worried about stop and frisk, they worry about housing, jobs, and education. Those are the three main issues.
All right. We will have more coverage of the stop and frisk ruling later this hour. Now on to other aspects of the mayoral race. But again, if you want to read the judge's decision that just came down in the last hour, ruling unconstitutional on various grounds, the New York City stop and frisk program is currently practiced. You can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. We have Errol Lewis and Juan Manuel Benitez from New York One and New York One Noticias and WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen. When I left for vacation 2 weeks ago, Errol, it was just as the new revelations were breaking around Anthony Weiner and his Twitter and phone sex long after he resigned from Congress. And I figured, well, we probably won't have Anthony Weiner to kick around by the time I get back. And then it got even worse in a way when he called Republican candidate George McDonald grandpa at an AARP candidates forum, of all things, the other day. But he persists. Why is Anthony Weiner still in the race?
Well, Anthony Weiner is still in the race because Anthony Weiner, like many other candidates, realizes that he doesn't have to win 51% of the Democratic vote to be on his way to Gracie Mansion. What he has to do is get into a runoff, which is a much smaller, much narrower, and much more feasible goal, even despite all of the problems that he had, that he's been having that you just described. I mean, he's polling at around 10% now, but, you know, the people who are doing significantly better are polling around 16%. He's got millions of dollars to spend. His first ad is out today, and he thinks, you know, I don't think he's ever made a secret about this, that he thinks he can get into a runoff. And he thinks if he can get into a runoff, that he gets a reset, he gets to campaign some more, he gets to make his case, and, you know, he's not going away.
It's kind of a game of Democratic runoff musical chairs right now for people who don't know how this works. Two spots for presumably four contenders, Quinn de Blasio, Thompson, Weiner. So they're jockeying for first or at least second place in the September 10th primary. And, Bridget, were you on this Weiner calling McDonald grandpa at an AARP forum the other day? Did you see that? And I read the transcript of it, and I saw the New York One piece on it. And I go, really? You go to an AARP forum, and you call one of your opponents grandpa? Is he losing it?
Well, I would say that I think New York One was on it. They had that video first up on their website, but we had audio from the event. Yeah, it probably was not the best choice of words for Anthony Weiner to use against George McDonald.
And we should say it was not in the body of the debate. It was as they were exchanging angry words
exactly.
with each other before the beginning of the formal event, right?
Yeah, it was as they were speaking to each other, and you know, Anthony Weiner apparently touched Mr. McDonald, which he did not like, and responded with his own choice words. And, you know, George McDonald is a candidate who we, at this point, otherwise have not been talking a whole lot about, Republican candidate, head of the Doe Fund. And he has been sort of taking advantage, I think, of the latest round of scandal surrounding Anthony Weiner to, you know, engage in a bit of name-calling himself. He called him a self-pleasuring freak at an event in Queens the week before, and then, you know, attacked him again for his morals and his values at that AARP forum. And essentially, you know, in both those instances, we should say he was booed by many of the audience members. So, you know, to your question to Errol, I think that's part of the reason why Weiner stays in this event, in the race, because he still has people who support him. He still has people who think he deserves another chance, even though, you know, the story gets weirder and weirder.
And listeners, the audio
doesn't necessarily help him.
The audio of that exchange is not clear enough for radio, or we would play it. But we have placed the link to the New York One video and TV story on our webpage at WNYC.org. So that's another thing you can go there for this morning. If you want to see this moment for yourself, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show.
Can I take credit for that video, Brian?
Oh, were you there? Were you the one who was there?
I was shooting B-roll. Oh. Basically, it was so random, I couldn't even hear what they were saying at the beginning.
I didn't realize
so
it was you.
We discovered the video, Grace Raw and I. We discovered the video afterwards when we heard how George McDonald was retelling the story to people outside. So we went back to the video. I saw them talking at the beginning, but I couldn't really hear anything. So when we replayed it, we realized what had happened. It has. We have to say it also that George MacDonald has been trying to have a confrontation with Wiener. He's been really forceful, but also because they know that's the only way they get media attention. Wiener is a media sensation, and that's why he's still running. And the media, us, are giving oxygen to his campaign every time we cover him.
And Juan Manuel, I have to say, I live up in Inwood, which, as you know, is mostly Dominican world, and Dyckman Street was awesome last night with the restaurants jammed and all kinds of celebration in the streets for Dominican Republic Day in New York. And I didn't see much politics uptown. But the reports are that at the parade in Midtown, Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer both got big cheers when they joined the march. We'll get to Spitzer, but what do you make of it in Weiner's case?
Well, they are media sensations. People want to see them. People want to take pictures with them because they are on TV nonstop. But they are not on TV only on the political shows or the political news, but also on the gossip news. So people have this kind of relationship with them the same way they have a relationship with the Kardashians. So that's, I think, that's where the reaction is coming from, because then when we talk, when you talk to them and you ask these New Yorkers if they think about voting for Spitzer or Wiener, very few of them tell you that they are going to do so.
And Errol, it looked to me when I was away and was, you know, reading at least some news every day that with the mayoral primary getting closer and the Wiener scandals taking up too much media real estate, that the New York Times started publishing different people's valentines, if you will, to the other candidates. Maureen Dowd wrote one for Christine Quinn, Gina Belafonte for Bill de Blasio, Times columnist Bill Keller now for Bill Thompson. So if the wind really is coming out of Wiener's campaign sails, despite some of this froth because of his celebrity, if the vacuum is being filled now with the Times as one indication, maybe these love letters to other main contenders, you know, are going to matter.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call them love letters, but it's look, it's objectively true that Wiener is doing worse. He's polling around 10%, and that in and of itself is a reason to give him a little bit less coverage. I mean, you know, it's not fair and it's not fun, but the reality is when people are doing well in the polls, they command and frankly deserve a little bit more scrutiny than somebody who's polling at, you know, 2%. Or somebody who is running a symbolic candidacy with no money. And so to the extent that Wiener has started to fade in the polls, it doesn't make sense to sort of intensively cover him. Also, frankly, you know, he's like everybody else. He's gotten what he wanted. He wanted to be considered like every other candidate, and that's just what he's gotten. If he's got an event that's just not all that interesting or doesn't break any new ground, then maybe he doesn't get 20 reporters the way he used to. And I think that's probably attribute collectively to the people in our line of work that, you know, we'll cover it when it's important or newsworthy. And if it's not all that important or newsworthy, then, you know, you take your scarce resources and you apply it to the story of the day.
Yeah. And Bridget, George Soros endorsed de Blasio, who is trying to run as the truest progressive in the race, maybe save John Liu, other than John Liu, who he would portray as marginal, including for de Blasio his income tax hike on the top 1% with the money dedicated to universal pre-K in the city. Do you think there'll be any impact from the George Soros endorsement?
Yeah, I think de Blasio is picking up a lot of backing from what people would consider the most liberal, the most progressive voices. He was also endorsed by The Nation last week. You know, I think he's certainly seeing his numbers rise, and he's neck and neck with Bill Thompson. But I do think that Bill de Blasio's candidacy appears to be, you know, the wind is in his favor at this point.
And Bill Thompson also has a lot of endorsements from different groups. He's going to probably be happy about the stop and frisk ruling publicly today, Juan Manuel, despite the fact that he's also got the police unions behind him.
Yes, and he has a strange position on stop and frisk. It's been evolving, and lately he's been more forceful against it. But I do believe that last week was Bill de Blasio's week with that ad that he had with his son and Dante. And it was an introduction to many African-American voters who didn't have a clue about Bill de Blasio's family. So Bill Thompson has to be careful because now he's getting into his constituency, and that could prove really harmful for his results.
Because Bill de Blasio doesn't have a natural identity group constituency, except maybe the tall people vote. So he wants people to know that he's married to a black wife and has an identifiably black son, as far as, let's say, the NYPD would be concerned.
Don't forget the Brooklyn hipsters.
Right. But Juan Manuel, on that point, or Errol, I'll ask you, will the Democratic mayoral endgame revert to identity group appeals now, which I think have been subtle and understated so far this year? Thompson to blacks, Quinn to women and gays, Wiener to Jews, de Blasio making this case to African Americans, as we just discussed. Do you think the media has been ignoring the realities of group voting, which is epic and perennial in New York City, too much?
Yeah, I think people have ignored it. I mean, and I've been a little mystified by that. You know, I mean, it's not that we revert to ethnic and racial line voting. It's that that's the way it's been done in New York for over 100 years. So, yeah, will it revert to type? Well, that would be the safest way to bet. Now, things can always change, and you know, a good reporter will always keep their eyes open because who knows where, you know, the Albanian vote is going to go or, you know, this group or that group. But, you know, the main outlines of this, the way that black and Latino voters tend to break in races like this is very well known. And frankly, it underlies a lot of the polls. You know, we go out and we report on these polls, but they are making assumptions, these pollsters, about who's going to come out and in what numbers. And that becomes increasingly important as we wind down these last 30 days before the primary. And, you know, you can get everything else right in a poll, but if you get the composition of the electorate wrong, it throws off all of the results. And so that's really what the whole story is now. Who's going to come out? Where are groups like the Latino vote, who have, you know, no identifiable strong candidate at this point? How's that vote going to break? You know, I mean, those are some very interesting questions and
crucial questions. And so Juan Manuel, with no Latino contender among the candidates, how are the leading candidates trying to distinguish themselves with Latino voters?
Don't forget about Eric Salgado. And if we are to believe the latest New York Times Siena poll,
yes,
from last week, I'm not sure how big the sample of Hispanic voters was, but he was number three among Hispanics, Eric Salgado.
Among Hispanics. Who were one and two?
Kristen Quinn and Bill Thompson, from what I remember. So, yes, there's no major leading contender among Hispanics in the Democratic primary. I'm not sure how the Hispanic community is going to vote. I think it's going to be really fragmented. The Hispanic community is getting appeals from the Kristen Quinn campaign, from the Thompson campaign, from the Bill de Blasio campaign, and also really strongly from the John Liu campaign. And remember, never underestimate John Liu. He always polls way lower than he really ends up in getting at the end of the day.
And I can say there's a African immigrant-owned dry cleaners that I pass on the way to work with a big John Liu sign. So he's certainly appealing to all kinds of immigrant groups, among other things.
And I think it's really unfair that we are all talking about, well, Anthony Weiner's still in the race. He's still in the race, even though some people believe he should drop out. But then we stopped basically covering John Liu because he didn't get matching funds. So I think there's a little bit of unfairness in that coverage that we're getting from John Liu, because always he's going to poll lower than the actual results on voting day are going to be.
Is Eric Salgado in our mayoral debate next week?
I'm not sure I can answer that question.
I doubt that, honestly, because the official debates have a fundraising threshold and a polling threshold that you have to pass before they will include you. And I don't think I've ever seen a poll where he was above what I believe is the polling threshold, which is about 5%.
We will continue in a minute to preview the WNYC New York One debate season, which begins tonight with the Democratic controller debate between Spitzer and Stringer, which Ara Lewis from New York One and I will be co-moderating. We'll continue with Ara Lewis from New York One, Juan Manuel Benitez from New York One and New York One Noticias, and WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen in a minute. And listeners, we're going to open the phones now specifically for your suggested questions for our Spitzer-Stringer debate tonight. If you want to suggest any, you can call us up right now. We have not finished this prep yet. I guarantee you this is a legitimate request for question suggestions for the controller candidates, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Great to be back. Hello, everybody. It is debate season in New York City. And as I said just before the break, a series of WNYC New York One debates sponsored by the Campaign Finance Board under the actual campaign finance law will take place beginning tonight. Ara Lewis, New York One's Road to City Hall host, and I will be co-moderating at 7 o'clock tonight the debate for the comptroller nomination on the Democratic side between Eliot Spitzer and Scott Stringer. Again, if you want to suggest questions for that debate, there are two things you can do. You can call us up right now at 212-433-WNYC, or you can go to our website. In fact, there's lots for you to do on the WNYC website during these three debates this season that'll take place between tonight and next Wednesday. It's the Public Advocates debate this Thursday night, the Democratic mayoral candidates debate next Wednesday night, all at 7 o'clock live on WNYC and on New York One. We'll have an online chat live during the debate tonight that you can participate in at WNYC.org with reporters and other political watchers. And we've got reading material up for you to get up to speed on the candidates. You can find out how to register to vote, which you have a few more days to do, all on our website now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Some of the questions that have been coming in on our site suggested for the controller debate tonight. Cantata 21 writes, how will you monitor Wall Street banks when it comes to pension funds, particularly hidden fees on 401k accounts? Gothama suggests a question. Do you feel that hedge funds are an appropriate investment for city pension funds? And someone called Deep Pile of Ashes suggests, how will you modify the contracting process to avoid another city time situation from unfolding? So add your voice or vote up to the top some of the questions that are already there at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Ara Lewis is with us, along with Juan Manuel Benitez, who hosts the Puerto Politica politics program on New York One Noticias, their Spanish language station, and WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen is also with us. So, Errol, did Friday's first debate between the controller candidates on Channel 7 surprise you, especially how explicitly Stringer went after Spitzer's prostitution scandal?
I was a little surprised. Stringer had said repeatedly on camera, that he wasn't going to go there, he didn't want to get into it, and he was trying, I think, to sort of subtly distance himself from it, because it's not always a good look to be out there, kind of bashing your opponent. But apparently something has changed and he's decided, for either strategic or who knows, even sort of personal ethical reasons, that he just didn't want to be quiet about it anymore. And he went right after him. I was even more surprised, I have to tell you, Brian, by how hard he went after Spitzer's record as attorney general and as governor. Because I remember those years a little differently, I guess, than Scott Stringer does. But he really, really took it to him when it came to the one budget that Spitzer put together as governor. It wasn't a god awful budget, and his years as attorney general had just, success after success after success. And I didn't think a frontal attack was going to be the way that Stringer would handle that. I thought he was going to say something like, you know, well, that was then, this is now. But he basically really went after him. And so, you know, we have a very clear, stark contrast between the candidates, and I wasn't expecting it to be quite as stark as it was presented on Friday.
Well, Bridget, you covered that debate on Friday. What do you make of it?
Well, as Errol said, it was not a boring debate at all. From the start, Scott Stringer was on the attack. And you know, I agree with Errol. The fact that he was so aggressive about Spitzer's record in, you know, in Albany, called him a colossal failure as governor, was surprising and powerful. At the same rate, you know, Spitzer sort of returned the barb and said, like, you've been in government for 20 years. What is the policy impact you've had? And that was also, you know, I thought a pretty aggressive and a pretty assertive attack against Stringer. I'm very much looking forward to the debate that you two will conduct tonight. In particular, I'm excited to hear some questions around some of the spending and some of the reports that we've seen over the weekend from the Campaign Finance Board about the amount of money Spitzer has spent in, you know, the time that he's been in this campaign just to get on the ballot, and the amount that he will continue to spend leading up to the primary, since he's not participating in the Campaign Finance Board's matching fund program.
In other words, he's spending money out of his own wealth, and he's not limited to small campaign donations, since the donations
exactly
are basically from himself, that Scott Stringer is limited to in order to get the public matching funds. But Bridget, so since you're covering the finances of the campaigns, can you fact check something that Spitzer said on Friday, which was basically that he's not going to spend any more money, despite his personal wealth, than Stringer's going to spend on this campaign?
You know, it's unclear. There's reports that he has told the Campaign Finance Board that he's going to spend, you know, no more than $12 million. And then when he was then asked that question again after the debate, he said, I don't know where that number came from. So it's not clear. I mean, the best thing that we can do is continue to look at these reports from the Campaign Finance Board where they do have to report their spending.
And Errol, on this question of Stringer going after Spitzer's record as governor, you sounded a minute ago like you were defending Spitzer's record as governor as basically successful, but one could also say that perhaps he wouldn't have had to resign over the prostitution scandal had he had more support. He alienated so many people with his, quote, steamroller approach for the short time that he was governor. There was that Troopergate scandal, which, you know, I'm not sure either party really liked. And he alienated a lot of Democrats as well as Republicans. And so one could say that on that level, his governorship was a failure.
Well, let me be clear. I think what I found surprising was what I interpreted Stringer's attacks on the short governorship of Spitzer as the kind of almost insider kind of a commentary that you hear in places like Albany, where they say, "Oh, the guy won't work with anybody." Well, I don't know. Does that really matter to the, say, you know, undocumented New Yorkers who are hoping to get driver's licenses, or did they like the policy? I mean, I thought the policies that he rolled out, I mean, people forget what it had been like after three terms of Pataki. I mean, the whole premise of the Spitzer candidacy that year was that New York has been moribund, that there's a whole long list, a whole lot of items that have gotten no attention, and we're finally going to get to them. And he did roll out initiative after initiative. And, yeah, the whole thing crashed and burned, and he had huge problems with a lot of the insiders. But it was really quite something to see it all just dismissed as either a waste of time or a colossal failure, and that bringing of a liberal agenda to Albany, which was, you know, sort of the whole, again, the premise of that campaign that brought Spitzer to the governor's mansion was just kind of tossed away. It was kind of remarkable.
Well, we'll see how they go round on it tonight. Let's get in some of these callers before we go back to coverage of the ruling from the federal court this morning that the stop-and-frisk program as practiced by the NYPD is unconstitutional. We will go back to covering that in a couple of minutes, but let's hear some of the question suggestions for tonight's Spitzer-Stringer debate from some of our listeners. Mina in Brooklyn, thanks a lot for calling.
Oh, good morning, Brian. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I just wanted to mention that during the time that Mr. Spitzer was a governor, he changed the workers' compensation law to the point that it was going to benefit all of the insurance company, not the disabled worker. So this disabled workers, that they were chronically, in pain and they were receiving therapy, it was their therapy was dropped off, and they just left out in cold, and everything was towards not supporting the disabled worker. Right. It was everything towards supporting the insurance company.
Mina, thank you. So on workman's comp, when Spitzer was governor, Margaret in Carroll Gardens. Hi, Margaret. You got a question?
Oh, yes. I would like for the candidates to be asked their opinion about the development plan in Midtown East. And it may not be related to what the controller does, but I'm just curious to how these candidates would approach this issue. I guess I see it as, are they willing to stand up to the real estate industry in New York?
Thank you very much. And Roberta in Inwood, you got a question for them tonight?
Yeah, thank you. I followed the debate around the Manhattanville expansion of Columbia, and at the time, Scott Spitzer was
Stringer.
Scott Stringer.
Their names are entirely too similar.
Sorry,
we'll have to do something
Stringer
about that.
Was promoting his own development plan. It was going to be like this big deal. I would like to hear him assess how that has played out, what progress he thinks, because the whole issue of development in Harlem and uptown in general is a big issue. With that, I mean, Spitzer is a real estate guy. There's a lot of questions uptown about how people are planning to make use of the land under the city housing projects. Like, are they going to be taken down or changed or air rights sold? There's an issue in the news today about Riverbank State Park and those air rights. So real estate and development uptown, and particularly how Stringer thinks his wonderful plan worked out.
Okay, Roberta, thank you very much. And listeners, if you want to contribute more questions, suggestions, you can do so on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You will see the tool there that's easy to use and on which you can even vote up to the top some of the questions that other people have suggested. So go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show for that. Also to read the judge's decision on stop and frisk today, which we posted a link to. Also to see the New York One piece on Anthony Weiner calling George McDonald grandpa at an AARP forum the other day. And Errol, you and I have a 3:30 meeting on the set this afternoon, so we'll take all these questions, suggestions under advisement and see what kind of a debate we can put together for tonight, right?
Yeah, I really thank your listeners. I think they saved us a little work here.
I think so. Juan Manuel, last word.
I have a quick one. Convince me that you want this job for the right reasons, because we know that Scott Stringer wanted to run for mayor, and Spitzer, this might be the first stop to redemption before he gets to run for the executive position in the city for mayor of the city, something he won't rule out in the next in 4 years.
All right. And Bridget Bergen, thank you very much for joining the Scrum today.
Thank you.
We'll be hearing you on WNYC News, WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen, and New York One's Errol Lewis and Juan Manuel Benitez from New York One Noticias. Errol and I co-moderating at 7 o'clock tonight on WNYC and New York One, the Stringer-Spitzer Democratic primary controller debate. More coverage of the federal court ruling declaring stop and frisk as practiced unconstitutional in New York City coming up next. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.